Blog Talk Radio.
Bring
Abayomi Azikiwe, and welcome back to another edition of the Pan-African Journal. The Pan-African Journal is an audio news magazine. It's brought to you here on a weekly basis. I am your host. Today is Sunday, July 18th, 2021. We're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. Later on, we'll be coming up with our Pan-African Newswire report. We'll have dispatches on how the Republic of South Africa commemorated Nelson Mandela Day inside the country. Sudan continues to face uncertain economic times amid inflation and shortages of consumer goods. Zimbabwe government says that it is preparing to receive more vaccines to combat the current COVID-19 pandemic impacting Southern Africa. And Mozambique is facing a shortage of vaccines as the fight against the pandemic intensifies. In the second hour, we examine in detail the recent unrest in South Africa as President Cyril Ramaphosa visits areas hit by the disorder. The president then delivers a national address in honor of the birthday of the late founder of modern South Africa, former President Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela. Finally, we hear reports on events taking place throughout the African continent and the world. These and other features will be brought to you during the course of our program. Stay tuned. We'll take a musical interlude in the West African state of Ghana with the music of A.B. Krenzel. Let's listen in. Thank you.
me I'm country miss. I'm a water boomy. I'm country miss. I'm a new sweat boomy. I'm a real worker me. I'm country miss. I'm a many age, you know. I'm a real worker me. I'm a new sweat brammy. All day. I'm country miss. I'm a new sweat brammy. I'm a rough worker me, I'm a maniac, you know. Son of a biaji wa boss, son of a biaji wa boss. I do best you know, parking. Oh, no,
kachi.
Hey, one
man. Easy one and man.
Hey, one man.
Go clean nana dom yo.
Hey, one man.
Go baby, ya sol man yo.
Hey, one man.
Go tane bona dosu.
Hey, one man.
Ya samwele ya fewa bro.
Hey,
ya bo wunchi ni mu. Mama funsawa.
Yeah,
Welcome back, and you're listening to the Pan-African Journal worldwide radio broadcast for Sunday, July 18th, 2021. We're broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. That was the music of A.B. Crenzel from the West African state of Ghana. And right now we want to move into our Pan-African Newswire segment. And our lead story in the Pan-African Newswire for today deals with the current political and security situation in the Republic of South Africa. And South African President Cyril Ramaphosa joined the post-riot cleanup efforts earlier today, and his government warned against vigilantism and sought to avert racial conflict following the unrest. The country was gripped by more than a week of chaos. They claimed more than 200 lives as looters ransacked shopping centers and unidentified groups torched key industrial infrastructure and blocked trade routes. The violence was the worst in post-apartheid South Africa and erupted after former President Jacob Zuma was sentenced to 15 months in jail for snubbing a corruption inquiry. His trial for graft is in a separate case is due to resume on Monday. We all admit there were lapses. We will gather ourselves and do a proper review, Ramaphosa told a crowd outside a mall in the Soweto Township. People want to defend what we have in the form of democracy, our constitution, and economy. Ramaphosa is under mounting pressure as only one of the suspected masterminds of what officials have called an attempted insurrection, which caused an estimated $1 billion U.S. dollars of damage, has been arrested. When asked if he would shake up his ministers responsible for security, he said, "We are reviewing the situation, yes. Access to basic necessities like food has become a pressing issue in the areas affected by looting, arson, and violence, as many stores were destroyed while others remained closed. Many in the worst hit KwaZulu-Natal province are now going hungry. At a branch of the Grace Family Church in Durban, trestle tables were piled high with donated fresh vegetables and bread to prepare food parcels for these and those in need of food." Police Minister Beke Sile has warned against vigilante acts after residents of Phoenix outside of Durban, a township mostly of Indian origin South Africans, were accused of victimizing their black counterparts. "If we hear that people are being racially profiled at roadblocks set up in the area, people including police are being intimidated, violated in the extreme cases, people are being beaten up and their cars are searched and torched, this is simply criminal and won't be tolerated," he said in a statement late on Saturday. A task force of 10 detectives would be deployed to the area to investigate the deaths of 20 people during the mayhem, he added. The 212 people reported killed nationwide, some were shot and others died in looting stampedes. Alongside the human and economic toll, officials closed several beaches around Durban, warning of a possible contamination after a chemical spill at a factory set ablaze during the mayhem. Ramaphosa will visit malls in Soweto Township, the most populous part of Gauteng Province, the country's economic powerhouse, which also saw rioting and looting to support businesses' owners with cleanup efforts. The leadership of the African National Congress will assess the damage caused by the recent looting and vandalism and to engage communities and various stakeholders in the rebuilding and reconstruction program, the party said in a statement. Sunday marks Mandela Day in honor of Democratic South Africa's first president, Nelson Mandela, and would be a day of jubilation for the ANC under normal circumstances. Pope Francis prayed for South Africa on Sunday, saying that violence had rocked the country, already hit by health and economic challenges because of the pandemic. Many in industry, particularly tourism, which accounts for 7% of the gross domestic product, worry that the violence will damage South Africa's reputation and set back economic progress. Traffic was back to normal along a main highway linking the country's north to the port of Durban, which had been closed for days, but businesses in Durban are seeking security assurances. "And as much as we are over the hurdle now, we are still scared," Zanele Komo of the Durban Chamber of Commerce and Industry told the Agence France-Presse. "The world is looking at us with those negative eyes, but we want to tell them that South Africa has a lot of good people and we have a lot of good stories to tell," said Siyanda Kumalo, a head teacher in Durban who helped to clear up the Dube Village Mall outside Durban following the unrest. And in Sudan, there's been ongoing rocky transition since the April 2019 coup against President Omar al-Bashir, following mass protests against his rule triggered by economic hardship. Sudanese protesters burnt tires during demonstrations in Abdurrahman, the twin city, urging the government to step down over delayed justice and recent harsh economic reforms. This took place on June 30th. Now, these demonstrations are being triggered by growing popular discontent against a recent government and after the IMF approved a $2.5 billion loan and debt relief deal with Sudan that will see the country's external debt reduced by some $50 billion, according to news reports. Now, inflation in Sudan has jumped to more than 400%. State media reported this earlier today. Now, this takes place amid popular discontent over rising prices after a series of IMF-backed economic reforms. The annual inflation reached 412.75% last month, compared with 378.79 percentages in May. This is the official news agency, SUNA, reported this earlier today, and they were quoting our government's statistics. SUNA said that the latest spike in the inflation rate was because of price hikes, including on food. Sudan has been going through a rocky transition since the April 2019 ouster of President Omar al-Bashir, following mass protests against his rule triggered by economic hardship. The transitional government installed in August of 2019 has vowed to fix the economy, which has been battered by decades of U.S. sanctions and mismanagement under Bashir. In recent months, Sudan scrapped diesel and petrol subsidies and carried out a managed float in the Sudanese pound to stem a rampant informal market. The measures seen by many Sudanese as harsh were part of reforms backed by the International Monetary Fund to enable Sudan to qualify for debt relief. Now, just on Friday, the Paris Club, which is Sudan's biggest creditor, said it would cancel much of the debt owed to it by Sudan to help draw Khartoum back into the international fold. That announcement came as part of a wider effort by the IMF to relieve more than $50 billion of Sudan's debt, around 90% of its total, over the next few years. Late last month, hundreds of people took to the street in the capital and in other cities across Sudan to demand the government's resignation over the latest IMF-imposed reforms. And you're listening to the Pan-African Newswire segment of the Pan-African Journal. I am your host, Abayomi Azikiwe, and in the southern African state of Zimbabwe, according to an article that was published earlier today by the Zimbabwe Herald, the Zimbabwe Sunday Mail, Zimbabwe coronavirus vaccinations is turning out to be one of the best in Africa, the newspaper says. They said that by Friday, 1,096,002 people had received their first inoculations, while 635,738 have been fully vaccinated in Zimbabwe. As of July 10th of this year, Seychelles was the African country with the highest coronavirus vaccination rates, as 142 doses were administered per 100 individuals. Zimbabwe ranked 10th at 9.85 doses per 100. Vaccination rates, however, has markedly improved in the past 2 weeks, as the rollout program has been ramped up. Just on Friday alone, a record 59,750 people were vaccinated. Buoyed by the 2.5 million vaccines which arrived in the country from China in the last 3 weeks, and 3.5 million more expected by the month's end, President Mnangagwa last week announced that the government intends to vaccinate 1 million people in the next fortnight. A snap survey carried out by the Sunday Mail in Harare show that a number of vaccination centers now have both doses and most are clearing queues by lunchtime, putting the government target within reach. Visits to Parinyatwa group of hospitals, Sally Mugabe Central Hospital, Kambuzumba Polyclinic, Kuwazana Polyclinic, and Kuwazana Satellite Clinic show that demand for vaccines is being met. Official statistics show that an average of 33,000 people per day were vaccinated against COVID-19 in the last 7 days, with the trend showing an upward trajectory with each passing day. At Parinyatwa group of hospitals, there are now two vaccination centers catering for the first and second doses, respectively. When the Sunday Mail crew arrived just before lunchtime on Wednesday, the queue for those taking the second dose had been cleared, while there was a relatively short queue for those that were taking the first dose. "I came here a few weeks ago, but I gave up because there was chaos, with some people demanding cash if he wanted to be served on time," said Mr. Latson Mungomba from Avondale. "But today it was different. I came here early, and they took a bit of time to start serving, but once they started, the process was quick. It took me about 45 minutes I think that was a fast, considering that when I arrived, the queue had already grown long. I encourage people to get vaccinated because this is life-saving. If you still need a lot of convincing to get vaccinated, then you're not talking, then you're not taking very good care of your health. And the situation was almost the same at the Sally Mugabe Central Hospital, where both queues for the first and second doses had been cleared by lunchtime. Members of staff who declined to be named as they are not authorized to talk to the press said there was an exponential growth in the number of people who were getting vaccinated. The demand, particularly for the first dose, has already increased dramatically, and it's good that we have the doses. And finally, in Mozambique, in his address to the nation on Thursday night, President Filipe Nyusi announced that the government has acquired 11 million more doses of vaccine against COVID-19, which should reach the country by the end of August. This, he said, would make it possible to step up the vaccination campaign so that by the end of the year, the majority of eligible Mozambicans will have been vaccinated. The mass vaccination will allow our country to make a safe and gradual transition to a situation close to normality, said Nyusi, stressing that the success of this transition will depend on the collaboration and solidarity of all Mozambicans. But even after taking two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine, all citizens, he added, must continue to observe basic preventive measures, including the obligatory use of masks in public places, regular washing or disinfection of hands, along with social distancing. To date, Mozambique has received 1,402,000 doses of the vaccine, 384,000 doses from the COVAX initiative, which is coordinated by the World Health Organization, 500,000 purchased by the Mozambican private companies, 260,000 donated by the Chinese government and the Chinese armed forces, and 100,000 donated by the Indian government. With Nyusi's announcement, the number of vaccine doses available will reach just over 12.4 million. At two doses each, that is enough to vaccinate fully. The government target is to vaccinate 17 million people by the end of the year. Nyusi did not say where the 11 million doses would come from or whether they will be purchased or donated. And with that, we're going to conclude the Pan-African Newswire segment of our program. And we want to remind our listeners that the Pan-African Newswire is an international press service that is, of course, some 23 years old. The Pan-African Newswire represents the only daily international news source on Pan-African and global affairs. And if you'd like to log on to the Pan-African Newswire so you can stay abreast of some of the most pressing and burning issues of the day, all you need to do is go to our website, and that is at panafricannews.blogspot.com. That's panafricannews.blogspot.com. And we're going to take a musical break, and we'll be back with more of our program for this week. Welcome back. The sound of 100 Proof Asian Soul with the track entitled Everything Good is Bad. And as we mentioned earlier, today represents the 103rd birthday of Nelson Mandela, who was born in 1918. And it is Nelson Mandela Day inside the Republic of South Africa. And in light of the unrest that has taken place over the last week, which has calmed to a great extent over the last 3 days, President Cyril Ramaphosa visited Gauteng, some of the affected areas, and as part of the cleanup operations that are going on right now. Let's listen to this report from the South African Broadcasting Corporation.
Is following ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa. You know, the president, ANC president, is leading in this operation cleanup and rebuilding following days of looting in various areas around the country. Our reporter Abungile is there. Brother Dumako, what are you witnessing there?
Let's move.
Well, certainly, Blaine, it's action now. The president of the ANC has arrived here at the fire mall, actually being shown by officials the extent to which the damage has happened following that looting that we've seen coming out of this part of Gauteng. Well, as you can see, there's quite a lot of pushing taking place. We have social distancing all the time, but I can tell you for sure that the president has arrived. I'm quite distraught and quite disturbed to what he's actually witnessing here. He's being shown by the officials. Let's probably take a listen to what they're saying now.
And then where does something happen here? Every time. Okay, we move. Just go. We move.
Certainly quite difficult for the president to see the extent because of the fact that there's quite a lot of people, including us, trying to get every single shot of what's happening. But the president does look quite shocked at what he's seeing thus far. He does look quite, you know, taken aback as to the extent at which the damage was caused here. We hope to hear a word from him a little later on, Blaine, as I was saying. He'll talk to us as to what's going to happen moving on and from what he's seen, you know, having taken place here. We wait and see then. But yes, certainly the president is being shown around the fire mall here in Soweto.
Just give us an extent, Abungile, with regard to the damage of this mall.
The mall is quite severely damaged. We've seen just now the president being shown the ShopRite store here. People having sort of lifted up the burglar proof that is actually used to close their store. And of course, I can see a Pep stores here literally empty, looted to the complete. You know, there's a shop, a cell phone shop that I'm seeing right in front of me here. I can certainly tell you for sure that it's been looted, it's been cleaned out. The damage is quite severe, I tell you now, Blaine. It remains also to be seen what the president is going to say regarding to what he's actually seen here. He's still being shown by the officials here from the region of the ANC as to basically what is happening. I'm sure you can hear that guy speaking on the loud speaker there. He's actually trying to tell us that as the media, let's give some way for the president. He's trying to push us back because they are saying that we are on a level 4 of the lockdown. We need to maintain social distancing. Literally, it's quite difficult to observe such because it's like they're walking in a passage and everybody wants to see what's happening, including the very officials surrounding the president, the law enforcement officials. You can see there's quite a lot of police surrounding him. They are actually also making it difficult for us to have, you know, the access as the media to actually be able to take those live visuals of the president. But yes, of course, I see Sibongile Besani in our view here. He's the head of presidents in the ANC. There's the Gauteng premier, chairperson of the ANC in Gauteng as well, David Makhura. They are part of this walkabout that is being, you know, conducted or taking place here with the president, Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yeah,
Abungile, the president is there in his capacity as president of the ANC. When he addressed the nation as president of the republic a couple of days ago, addressing the security situation in the country, he said, let us use Mandela Day to provide food and to the most vulnerable in our society. You've seen what's happening in Pietermaritzburg, where Mark Iketla Motlhabe is. It's resonating there. He also mentioned that we need to clean up our streets and start the task of rebuilding. Is that resonating where you are among residents?
People are moving out. Come. Give them space. The media is coming out. Members, come.
All right, it seems that we lost connection with Abongile Dumako, but he's following scenes at Indofire Mall. It's where ANC President Ramaphosa leading up this operation cleanup and rebuilding following days of looting, as you can see. And from reporting from Abongile Dumako is that that mall was severely damaged. We know that the ANC president, together with the national chairperson of the ANC, Gwede Mantashe, they're leading a team of members of the NEC on this cleanup and rebuilding program in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. And they are assessing the damage caused by the recent looting and vandalism and engaging with communities. Speaking about communities, Abongile Dumako is back with us. Abongile, I was just, you know, speaking about the message from the President of the Republic when he addressed the nation. I mentioned that he's there currently where you are as President of, in his capacity as President of ANC, but when he addressed the nation, he spoke about Mandela Day and how we need to use this day to clean up our streets and start the task of rebuilding. My question to you is, from your assessment, given the temperature of views on the ground, is that resonating with the communities?
The community, in a nutshell, Blaine, has been actually sort of, for a lack of a better word, closed off away from the shopping mall as the president is still conducting this walkabout here, trying to get a sense of what extent the damage is. Basically, when we sort of arrived here, trying to sort out how the communities feel about what happened, and of course, the sentiment is that it's not nice to have seen their mall being destroyed to this extent, and of course, things going back to normal following this devastating turn of events. However, with regards to Nelson Mandela International Day, where one has to sort of hand a hand to the needy, the president has had made it clear during his address the day before, I mean two nights ago, saying that people must go all out. In fact, this is part of what he actually had called for. One was then with regards to the fact that now he's here wearing his ANC president cap, and of course, having said that, South Africans wearing his government cap as the president, saying that people now must come and actually give a hand to the needy. We don't know basically whether it's under the ANC now or it's under him as governor, but the obvious thing, Blaine, is that he's here as a president of the ANC. And we also understand that this is not the only mall that he's going to visit. He's going to go to Maponya Mall to actually speak to locals there. You remember Maponya Mall was not affected. One can only imagine that he seeks to actually say thanks to those who defended public property and said, no, it's not going to happen. So basically, the Nelson Mandela Day being observed in the sense that people are sort of awaiting even an opportunity to come here, be allowed inside as they're still closed off, they are still sort of kept away from the mall. They are to come inside and actually take those brooms and continue with the mop-up operations. Because one can also see that a lot of cleaning still needs to take place in as far as the debt or the rubbish or the rubble that we see having been happening here in Indofire Mall.
The country is going through multiple challenges. COVID-19 is just one of it. It's a big one, exacerbating existing challenges. Worldwide, we know millions of people have lost their lives. What's the count now? Over 4 million? Over 4 million people have lost their lives due to COVID-19 related complications. Millions of people have lost their livelihoods. So it's this balance between lives and livelihoods when you take into consideration the level of lockdown that we need to go in. But are you getting a sense, you know, as we see the ANC president doing his bit in order to clean up, are you getting a sense from people on the ground, from what you've been covering, that people are increasingly dependent now on one another to survive? Is that the sense you're getting? Is that the sentiment on the ground during this period of time?
Yes. Absolutely. And that sense is quite evident. That sense is quite prevalent. People are now looking onto the very government by the ANC to actually pave a way forward for them, if you like, give them a bit of a green light as to basically what are the plans, what is it that they seek to do moving on to actually make those who have lost their livelihoods as a result of the pandemic with regards to basically what's going to be the next, you know, agenda, looking at the fact that now people have lost jobs, people have like not having a direction as to what they're going to do moving on. President Ramaphosa certainly has got a lot to juggle around, you know, as far as the economy is concerned, to make the point that the damage that we see having been caused by the looting on top of a pandemic that has also caused quite havoc when it comes to the livelihoods and people. So, got a lot of things to sort of put on the table and make sure that the economy is revived. For the locals on the ground, it will take a lot of convincing, if you understand what I'm trying to say, for them to believe that actually something is going to happen. So we wait and see for the president to actually divulge plans moving forward as to basically what are they going to do regarding this. It seems that he's going to talk. I'm trying to reach to where he is so that I can put the microphone, we can hear what he has to say.
Let me start off by thanking you all for wearing your masks. Pambili, ngama masks, pambili. Pinde putting in bonge about umsebenzi enowenzayo la. I want to thank you for coming together as a community.
people from outside to come and do wrong things here. I thank you for that. We keep the food in the morning, and as we have said, we have a food after that. God is not respond in this time in the way that we should have. If the spirit is coming in the time, now we will be there. Let the relation may not have taken place. All the problems are out of all of our Asia, if we are going to be there, we want to strengthen our law enforcement officer. I also want to thank the senior
They came to the end of the plan to attack our democracy and to ravish our constitution. And again, we must never allow them, never allow anyone to destroy our democracy. Happy living democracy, happy living. Happy living democracy, happy living. Now the next step for us is to rebuild. We must rebuild. We have learned valuable lessons here. We must rebuild. We must rebuild from an economic point of view. Find a way of supporting the workers. We must also support the businesses that have gone along here. And we will act together to make sure that we defend and we rebuild. I also want to thank the religious community because of this community. In addition to faith, have been coming forward, offering advice, offering suggestions, and we thank them for that. So comrades, not always the AUA enemy now, we can move forward. And other people are saying, now as our Africans, we are more united than we have been in the past. This incident has really united us. It has solidified us, and we must emerge out of this much, much stronger and much more capable than we were before this incident happened. And all I can say is that we shall never be defeated, because a united people will never be defeated. Not by our father, not by our dad,
the president of the ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa, addressing some people that have gathered in the Indofire Mall. As you know, this mall was damaged due to the unrest, the looting. Basically, the president of the ANC thanking the community for standing firm and against the looting. He says, reiterating the message that he shared with us a couple of days ago when he spoke to us in his capacity as president, saying that this was well-organized attack and we must not let anyone destroy our democracy, he says. And remember, when he addressed the nation as president, he says, while the security forces are essentially essential to restoring order and stability, he said, this assault on our democracy will ultimately fail. Why? He says, because the people of South Africa will not allow it. And he says, if we stand together, no insurrection or violence in this country will succeed. So he's got a pretty busy day as president of the ANC, moving around various areas, visiting various areas on Mandela Day. It's a cleanup operation, trying to rebuild in terms of the livelihoods that were lost, potentially lost, due to the looting. He will be assessing the damage as well. We will try to... Do we have Abungile on the line? to see a large number of people have gathered there in order to, one would assume, engage with the president of the ANC. Do we have audio on this? All right, let's listen in. You'll remember the promise or the commitment that the president made in his address to the nation a couple of days ago with regards to holding those accountable for the unrest that this country has experienced this week. He said, we will extinguish the fires that are raging and stamp out every last ember. We will identify and act against those who lit the flame and those who spread it, and we will find those who instigated this violence. They will be held accountable for their deeds. You saw the Minister of Police, Bheki Cele, in KwaZulu-Natal yesterday engaging with the people there, the community. They're voicing their concerns with regards to safety issues. He also promised that those who were taking part in this unrest or instigated it will be held accountable. I wonder if it is indeed resonating with communities around the country, this commitment that he, the president, has made to the nation. Look, it's a ripple effect in terms of the consequences of such unrest and such looting. The president did mention that social partners have been meeting to discuss a range of measures which can be implemented to provide immediate relief, I guess, within the fiscal means. And these include the provision of emergency food relief and other assistance to those in greatest distress. You heard a report from Maki Getumatlabe in KwaZulu-Natal in Pietermaritzburg with regards to people coming together and providing help and assistance. A number of organizations have put their hands up in order to assist those in need. Let's hear from this.
Community
ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa engaging with community members there. He is at the Indofire Mall. His next stop, we understand, according to a program that we are seeing, could change. Next up is Jabulani Mall and then the Maponya Mall as well. This is called, it's being billed as he's leading an operation cleanup and rebuilding following days of looting. So we will track the president. The ANC president give you the very latest with regards to his interactions with the community. What more can he offer us in terms of this rebuilding that he's talking about, the cleanup operations that he's talking about? Abungile Dumako is live for us there. He is following the president, so we will get the very latest from him, as well as all our other reporters. We have reporters fanned our friend across the country with regards to Mandela Day. What is happening in your community? How has Mandela Day changed for you this year, given what we've gone through as a country over the past week? We've been seeing looting, destruction. We're also going to bring in very shortly the MEC for Education in KwaZulu-Natal with regards to damage to schools in that province. We're going to get the state of play on the ground as well, get a sense of how many schools were damaged, the level of concern going into the next week. We will bring him in, get the very latest.
Welcome back. And that was a SABC report from earlier today featuring President Cyril Ramaphosa while he was touring areas that had been damaged during the unrest, which began last weekend, which impacted sections of KwaZulu-Natal province as well as Gauteng. Right now, to the address delivered by President Cyril Ramaphosa earlier today in honor of Nelson Mandela Day, July 18th, 2021, represented the 103rd anniversary of the birth of Nelson Mandela. Let's listen to President Cyril Ramaphosa.
But also, as we celebrate the legacy of Isithwalandwe Seaparangwe Nelson Rholihlahla Mandela, the former president of our movement and the first president of the Democratic South Africa, and indeed the father of our nation. It continues to be a real privilege for us as South Africans to join many people around the world as we all commemorate Madiba's birthday following the United Nations General Assembly decision in 2010 to declare the 18th of July as Nelson Mandela International Day. I can't think of many people around the world who have such an honor of having their day celebrated globally. And I can't think of, you know, many countries in the world that have the privilege of having had someone as great as Nelson Mandela walking the streets of our country with us. And it is a real honor that we need to cherish as the people of South Africa, because not many countries and not many people around the world have this type of honor. The celebration of this International Day recognizes and gives credence to President Nelson Mandela's commitment to human rights, conflict resolution, and reconciliation. It also gives us an opportunity for each one of us to dedicate 67 minutes on this special day to provide service to the people of our country through great and good deeds. And many people around the world did exactly that. And many people who did that, who set aside this time, are guided by Madiba's wise words that there can be no greater gift than that of giving one's time and energy to help others without expecting anything in return. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to be in Soweto to observe and join community members in the good deeds of cleaning up places that were recently trashed and destroyed following the outbreak of violence, destruction, and looting that is unprecedented in the history of democratic South Africa. It is clear now that the events of the past week were a deliberate, coordinated, and well-planned attack on our democracy, on our economy, and our people's livelihoods. Faced with such events, President Mandela would remind us that despite the challenging times we find ourselves in, that we should keep our heads pointed towards the sun and keep our feet moving forward. He would encourage us never to give up or even to despair. And it's important that we should have that message from Madiba to guide us along the path of some of the challenges that we are facing. And he would be right in giving us that advice. We owe it to the legacy of President Mandela and all our brave forebears who sacrificed so much for our freedom to remain steadfast in the face of this planned, well-planned and coordinated attack on our nation. in addition to protecting our nation and our freedoms, all of us must continue to stand firm against efforts to divide us, and that we must continue working together to renew aspects of how, yes, the governing party, the African National Congress, should function. And one of the greatest tributes we can pay Madiba is to renew and unite this organization that a number of you as panelists spoke about. The centerpiece of what the panelists were really saying is that there are two important things that need to be done. We need to strengthen the capacity of the state so that the state is able to address not only the security challenges that face our country, but also how the state is able to lead our country in ensuring that there is inclusive growth, that we address inequality, poverty, and unemployment. But also, more importantly, how this state does keep true to the legacy of Madiba and his commitment to the Freedom Charter. It was actually a very poignant moment when my sister said she prefers to remember the Nelson Mandela who committed himself to the Freedom Charter. Our young democracy and our movement, the second aspect, apart from strengthening the state, is yes, to renew, to strengthen, and to unite the governing party, because it is the governing party that in many ways directs the fortunes of our country, and therefore must be able to do precisely that. Because our young democracy and our movement are going through at the moment a very difficult time. Our survival as a constitutional democracy committed to the rule of law is under challenge. Very serious attempts were and continue to be made to instigate the unrest, insurrection against the government led by the governing party. We cannot say that similar attacks will not be attempted in future, nor can we say that those who seek to divide us will stop in their efforts. But we can say right now, in answering some of the issues that the panelists have raised, South Africans have shown their mettle. The response of our people gives us reason for optimism and to once again marvel at their spirit and their courage in ensuring that they defend their democracy, but also much that has also been said here is to say we want this governing party, this movement, to be strengthened so that it is able to play its important role. Now, the overwhelming majority of our people and structures and members have stood up and stood together and said, even as we face this crisis, that we will not allow this to rob us of the gains we have made in our democracy. Millions of our people have refused to be part of destroying people's livelihoods, people's lives, property, and our collective infrastructure. And I must say that we are grateful for this type of reaction, because the events of the past few days should not distract us from continuing to speed up the process of renewal of our movement. It is important for all of us to have a common understanding of what needs to be done to reunite and to renew this movement so that it can withstand this assault on our democracy, but also be able to execute the tasks of improving the lives of our people, and yes, making sure that what we've been facing over the past 27 years is addressed in a way that will take us forward. Developing a common understanding will also allow us to have a comprehensive response to the challenges before us. Now, as a movement, we've been dealing with the mandate that we were given by our last conference. And as an organization, we admitted that we had been having to deal with challenges that plagued us, divisions in our ranks, issues such as my brother Ramaphosa spoke about, and decrying the current state of our movement. Also the negative tendencies that have emerged, severely damaging the image of the ANC, and our standing in the eyes of the people, but also our weakening our ability to lead and to fundamentally transform our country. But that conference that I'm talking about resolved that our movement must restore its integrity, its standing, and it further committed to the people of South Africa that the ANC would do everything in its power to address the challenges it's facing, including corruption in both the public and the private sector. And in keeping with the decisions of our conference to renew the ANC, we're making progress in living up to the decisions that were taken. Discipline in the movement is being restored and being enforced. The work and decisions of our Integrity Commission are being followed up and are being implemented. And we are taking concrete steps to restore the values and the ethics and integrity of this movement that plays such a key role in the life of our country. And we are proceeding to implement long-standing resolutions aimed at, yes, eradicating corruption within our own ranks, but also beginning to deal with some of the social challenges that our people face. And as we do so, we're putting in place a stronger culture that will enable us indeed ensure that we renew this organization and that we instill accountability and organizational discipline. To put in place this stronger culture of service to the people of our country and to revitalize ANC branches, so that they are able to execute their tasks, but also to be able to deal with the resistance that may be there to the renewal process. And some of the panelists spoke about healing, and yes, healing is also required in the ANC. At the moment, the response of our movement must firstly focus on returning calm and order to the affected communities and ensuring that this anarchy does not spread to the rest of the country. Members of the ANC and the Alliance have been integral to many of the community actions to stand against looting, and we commend community members and leaders, and I met a number of them today and the other day in KZN, today in Gauteng, in Soweto. It has been particularly heartening to see ANC and the Alliance out amongst our communities and leading all these efforts to restore calm and order. And we urge everybody to have these engagements that a number of our panelists also spoke about. Now, these engagements that have also to go beyond just dealing with the current crisis of unrest and destruction, but also to deal with the pandemic that we are facing. Because during the course of this unrest, a number of people let their guard down. And going forward, our movement must drive a concrete program, yes, to discourage looting and violence, but we must also make it clear that we need to adhere to the pandemic rules and regulations, because this is still a present threat of this invincible enemy that we are facing. And we should do so in a participatory manner as we engage our people as a whole. This also means that our public representatives and ANC leaders, as it has been suggested even here, local level, must be more proactive in, yes, being of service to our communities and also addressing issues that also go beyond the current situation, that also go beyond, yes, the pandemic. We must have capable and efficient public representatives and civil servants who are able to address the needs of our people, because we have a duty to ensure that we are capable of serving the people of our country with distinction, and that we should continue improving the way that we work for our people. Now, one of the tragic outcomes of this is that violence that we face is the halting, slowing down of our vaccination program at a time when we now have, you know, more supply and we're increasing the pace of vaccination. Now, the way this looting was happening was such that, as I said, it's likely to increase infections, and we might see that manifesting itself as we move on forward. Now, a number of panelists have raised very important issues, and I particularly liked the suggestion that we should have Ubuntu 2021, maybe launch that, and that is something that obviously needs to be done in collaboration and cooperation with a number of role players, the Nelson Mandela Foundation, various other formations in our country, so that it becomes a whole of society effort where we are able to say we now need to underpin everything that we are doing with the notion of Ubuntu. And that should be aimed at addressing all the needs that all the panelists addressed. Yes, addressing the issue of leadership, that this is the time when we must provide leadership. And the leadership, as my brother Somadoda was saying, should not only reside in government, it should be also beyond government and engulf the country and get many of us to, yes, show this visionary leadership that will take our country forward in an Ubuntu type of way. where we put the interests of our people ahead of everything else. Because as a number of panelists were saying, some of the challenges that were exacerbated, not only by this unrest, but also by the pandemic, the inequality, the poverty, and the suffering of our people, that this is the time when that leadership is required by all of us. The suggestions have been made that in addressing the needs of our people, we must be bold enough to think about interventions such as the basic income grant. A number of panelists mentioned this. Yes, it requires bravery. And some suggestions have also been made of where the money will come from. Now, this matter is being given serious consideration. It is being discussed in the governing party. It is also being discussed at government level. It is a matter that is important, as it has also been raised by a number of role players in our society. And I do believe that in giving serious consideration to it, we should also heed what our panelists were saying tonight. And I think what was also said is that this will validate our people and demonstrate that, yes, some serious consideration is being given to their lives. And this matter will and is being addressed as we move on. And in many ways, it will also speak to what Nelson Mandela stood for, which a number of panelists said. His legacy was about caring for the people of our country. It was about how the Freedom Charter can be implemented. And we welcome that. And so there's a great deal of reasoning that is being put forward. The pandemic, as well as the destruction that has taken place in the past few days, also means that we need to give practical support to our people. We need to give practical support as to small businesses that have lost everything, to working people, both in our townships and in our rural areas. When I addressed the nation on Friday, I did say that these are matters that we are giving active consideration to, and we will be able to address them, including all the proposals that have been made to us. And in doing so, we will do it to address all these challenges, the socioeconomic challenges that are faced by our people, because that is really the key. The grinding poverty that we continue to see in our country requires that we should address it. We need to address the structural inequality in our economy and make sure that it becomes more inclusive. Now, the initiatives outlined in terms of the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan speak to this imperative, and more of these have already begun, you know, to be addressed. Other initiatives have, however, not shown the results yet that we would have expected. Unemployment, and particularly youth unemployment, has the potential to contribute to the social instability, and government must therefore focus on the issue of job creation and move much faster. This is a clear message that has come from our panelists. Now, we are busy doing an assessment of the progress that we are making in terms of the ERRP, which will allow us to strengthen and adapt the aspects of that program as required, particularly at this moment when the pandemic, but also the destruction that we have seen, are wreaking a lot of havoc. And will make a lot of havoc in the lives of our people. So we are required to speed up these processes, and we will lead efforts to ensure that as we do this, we put the interests of our people in a better position. And a number of panelists said this requires that as we address this crisis, that we must now utilize to democratize issues such as disaster management. We must ensure that there's food sovereignty and build really good systems that will include everyone and make sure that there is participatory involvement, but there should also be transparency. Yes, the issue of transparency was particularly raised when it comes to how we are going to ensure that we secure safety for the people of our country. This is an important aspect because our people require certainty about their safety. How security cluster in government will respond not only to this crisis, but on a medium and longer term basis to secure the safety of our people, so that we can have what one of our panelists called just peace, but I would call it just safety. One of the key pillars of the Freedom Charter is, and Madiba himself, and the legacy he has left us, is non-racialism. And how we should lead the process of non-racialism. And how in some quarters it's been seen that the ANC has not been placing enough emphasis on leading the project of non-racialism in our country. And this becomes particularly important as we see how, and we listen to reports of increased racial tension and incidents of racial violence, especially in some parts of KZN. And we also observe efforts to fuel racial tension through social media and other platforms. And it is therefore important that the structures of our movement, and indeed, all of us must work to promote a fundamental value of non-racialism and inclusive societies, even at the worst of times. Whilst in the dock, Madiba stayed true to the values of non-racialism. He was clear that he fought against white domination and would fight against black domination. We must all strive to emulate his example and build one South African nation. Yes, of course, what has happened in Phoenix needs to be investigated. It's been suggested that the Human Rights Commission must be asked to investigate the events that have also led to loss of life, and that has increased racial tension. And that is also the potential of through vigilantism, which we must not allow to take root in our country. And those opportunities or temptations must not be allowed at all. But we must also not participate in the spreading of fake news, as one of our panelists said, and messages that incite hate and spread prejudice and work. We must work to combat discrimination wherever we encounter it. And the suggestion was made that we should have possibly a portal that will deal with all these messages and ensure that those messages that are now being spread, voice notes, videos, are dealt with in a way that they don't send panic amongst our people. What our country needs now at a time of crisis is a united, is that all of us must be united. All of us must ensure that our communities are not divided. And from the ANC point of view, which is the governing party, we must make sure that the ANC remains united, and the ANC should be able to renew itself and make sure that it builds and continues to strengthen its structures to become vibrant centers of community organization and activism, because the status, the strength, and the unity of the ANC has a huge bearing on our country as a whole. The ANC leads society, but in order for it to lead society, it must be united, but it must also be united on principles, and it must also address the failures and the misdeeds that have often prevailed in the past. And this renewal must mean that the African National Congress, as panelist Ramakopa was saying, must end patronage, must end corruption in all its manifestations. And we must develop committed and capable cadres, capable, who are fit for purpose to serve the people with integrity, humility, and distinction. And the renewal process must also mean that we must strengthen our non-racialism posture and non-sexism throughout our own organization, and be able to lead the process of non-sexism and ridding our country of patriarchy as well. But we must also be able to build a more youthful organization and embrace such things such as technology, so as to address the unemployment that currently is a huge challenge to the young people of our country. Renewal must also mean that we enhance our people's confidence in our organization. And finally, renewal must mean that we unite the people of South Africa around the cause of building a better life for all. And building a better life for all would mean that we address all the various issues that have been raised tonight by our panelists. And I must say that the issues that were raised tonight are so relevant, and they must be top of mind to all of us. Building state capacity to be able to ensure that we address the socioeconomic challenges that our country faces, that we must be able to grow our economy and address also the immediate challenges, so that these challenges we've been facing, and we've been facing these many challenges of poverty, unemployment, over the past 27 years. And we must now recommit ourselves. And what I'm particularly grateful for is that both community activists, our intelligentsia, and various other panelists who participated in this webinar are all united on what needs to be done. This goes beyond just giving people like myself as leaders in the African National Congress, but a number of others, a great food for direction into the future, that these are matters that need to be addressed. So I come out of this webinar enormously enriched, and we will work to return to being that leadership and the ANC that Madiba would be proud of. And we will make sure that we build a movement that is once again the first choice of the people of our country. And I'd like to end by quoting what Madiba said, when he said, "I am fundamentally an optimist." And he said, whether that comes from nature or it's nurtured, I cannot say, he said, part of being optimistic is keeping one's head pointed towards the sun, one's feet moving forward. And he went on to say, yes, there have been many dark moments when his own faith in humanity was sorely tested. But he says, I would not and could not give myself up to despair. That way lays defeat and death. And I'd like to say that I remain optimistic that the many challenges that we are facing, of both a security nature, particularly in this current moment, we will be able to overcome. Of an economic nature, where we need to pointedly address the needs of our people, at an economic level, to address the desperate situation that many of our people are facing. At a socioeconomic level, we will be able to address them. And also be able to strengthen the capacity of the state. What has happened with the pandemic and what has happened in the past few days has shown up what I've often been talking about the capacity of the state. This moment gives us great opportunity to reflect, but to act. To act in a way where we address and repair the incapacity that we have. These are problems that have been confronting us over a number of years. They didn't start yesterday. The pandemic and what has happened recently gives us now the platform, the urgency, and the capability of acting with greater speed. And that is why Madiba's quote about optimism is so instructive to me. But I know that we can only be able to do what needs to be done to strengthen and unite the governing party, to improve the capacity of the state, to address the needs of our people on a variety of issues, the poverty, the inequality, and all that we'll be able to address working together. These are challenges that we cannot be able to have one single person working alone to address. It requires a collective effort. And what I am heartened with is that all the panelists have spoken very, very strongly and vocally about the need to act together in a cooperative way. And I particularly liked words such as, we must build platforms of truth. And sometimes hear the uncomfortable things, like I heard some of those tonight. But that with a measure of transparency, we must be able to address the challenges that lie ahead. Deputy Secretary General, I think tonight I walk away from this webinar more enriched, and also with a more keener resolve to be able to address these challenges that face our people. I'd like to say thank you, and we've heard the message, we will heed it as we strengthen both our movement and also increase the capability of the government to address all these matters. Thank you very much.
Well, of course, that was the President Cyril Ramaphosa delivering that memorial lecture as
thank
part of the
much,
ANC
Comrade
Mandela
President
Day program. We've heard from him just articulating
so well
that what's been shared over the past few days. I mean, you would have seen that the President also did a walkabout in Soweto today,
to
just in an effort to perhaps assist in the...
Welcome back, and that was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, his address in honor of Mandela Day here at the Pan African Journal. That speech was delivered earlier today over the South African Broadcast Corporation television. And our final segment, we'll hear some excerpts from Africa Live dealing with some of the most pressing and burning issues of the day. Let's listen in.
This is CGTN, China Global Television Network.
Gunmen kidnap dozens of villagers in northwestern Nigeria. Economic agreements and Belt and Road Initiative high on Wang Yi's agenda in Syria. And South Africa's President Ramaphosa claims recent riots were planned. Welcome to Africa Live on CGTN with me, Beatrice Marshall, in Nairobi. Also coming up on the program. In your business news, South Africa's production slows amid rise in infections and limited activity. And in sports, Al Ahly fans take to the streets of Cairo as the club wins its 10th CAF Champions League title. We begin this broadcast in Nigeria, where a police official says gunmen have kidnapped around 60 people. The armed men reportedly attacked five villages in the Shinkafi area, located in the northwestern Zamfara state. The attack took place overnight on Friday, according to the regional police spokesperson. Several witnesses speaking to Reuters news agency described seeing the gunmen flee into a nearby forest. So far, five of those kidnapped have been released. Well, let's cross over to CGTN's Deji Badmus is in Lagos for us. Deji, what can you tell us about the latest kidnappings?
Well, Beatrice, what we're learning is that this attack was actually orchestrated by notorious bandits now in Zamfara State. His father was arrested in a Kano State a couple of weeks ago, and in retaliation, he sent his boys to carry out this spree of kidnappings, if you like. I mean, attacking more than actually five villages. And unfortunately, what we understand is that he has threatened to continue the kidnappings until his father is released by security agents. Now, his father, by the way, was arrested in a bid to get him, and so he's actually threatened to continue this kidnapping now until his father is released. He said he's going to keep those he kidnapped until his father is released, and we understand he's actually writing letters now to other villages that they should prepare for an imminent attack. And so what you have now is that quite a number of people are vacating their villages for fear that they may be attacked. It's a terrible situation. And the number of people kidnapped, from what we're learning, is far beyond the number that has been given. What we're learning from people around that area is that up to 150 persons may have been kidnapped from different villages in Zamfara State.
Well, Deji, the people, as you mentioned, are now quite fearful because armed robberies and kidnappings for ransom, particularly in the north, have become so frequent, and many are afraid to travel by road. What is the solution to this security problem, and why is the government seemingly unable to deal with it?
Now, let me answer that question, Beatrice, by rolling out some stats for you to really understand and for our audience to understand why Nigeria continues to face this challenge. As we speak today, from 1987 to date, Nigeria has spent less than 1% of its GDP now on funding the military. So that's a challenge when you spend, when just less than 1% of your budget now, less than 1% of that to the GDP spent on the military, that is obviously a challenge. And then the number of active military personnel, and when I say active military personnel, I'm talking about the Navy, the Army now, and the Air Force. The number of active military personnel at the disposal of the government to fight all of these security challenges is just estimated at around 120,000. Now, consider the size of this country. We're talking about a country that is close to 1 million square kilometers. It will be difficult to have just 120,000 military personnel now to provide effective security for a country as large as this. Then you look at the police personnel you have. Altogether, we understand it's around 370,000. But those who are actually available, the police personnel who are actually available to do actual policing work now is just in the region of 120,000. That, too, is a challenge. So clearly, the government would need to recruit more. The government would need to increase its military spending. In terms of technology, it's actually not there. So it's why the country is having to deal, is facing this challenge now, if you like, and seemingly an enormous one. So it's a big challenge for the government. The government has said it's going to increase its spending on the military, on security. Parliament has accepted to increase the budget. We're waiting to see when that happens. But the truth is that the country is currently struggling to deal with what I would call an unprecedented security challenge it is facing. Because this security challenge is not just restricted to the north. You also have it virtually everywhere in the country. So it's indeed a challenge. And unless that is resolved, the issue of funding and recruitment, it's difficult to see how the country will be able to deal with this. Beatrice?
Deji Badmus joining us there from Lagos. Thank you. The Chinese foreign minister has paid an official visit to Syria. High on Wang Yi's agenda are agreements aimed at boosting the Syrian economy. Zara Aldezi reports from Damascus.
For the first time since war began in 2011, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi visits Syria. The two parties agreed on a new stage in bilateral ties and discussed Syria's involvement in China's Belt and Road Initiative for its geopolitical location and its senior role in the region.
The significance of the visit is highly symbolic, that it comes on the day of Assad's swearing-in ceremony, expressing those presidential elections in Syria are on international battles, not a local one. It also comes against the U.S. threats to all countries, and striving to make Asia for all Asians under the Belt and Road Initiative and free of U.S. unilateralism.
China's foreign minister and his Syrian counterparts signed economic agreements for China's contribution to Syria's economy and rebuilding efforts that have ravaged the country.
We were waiting for such a visit. China can highly contribute in Syria because of Chinese companies' huge capabilities, solvency, and human resources to transfer technologies and strategic projects. We are hopeful that China's role in rebuilding will help with what the decade-long war has destroyed, including industrial cities and city centers.
Syria-China ties began 1956, and it took a strategic turn after President Assad's visit to Beijing in 2004 that led to economic agreements. Since 2011, China has supported Syria politically as the United Nations by using its veto power and preventing any Western military intervention, as it made efforts to reach a political solution to end Syria's suffering.
The timing of the visit to Syria of China's foreign minister reflects the strength of bilateral ties between the two countries and China's commitment to help rebuild the war-ravaged country under Belt and Road Initiative. Zahrat Dirzi, CGTN, Damascus.
Well, the Chinese foreign minister has continued his tour and is now in Egypt. Adel Mahroui is standing by in New Alamein City, where meetings are set to take place. Adel, the Chinese State Council and Foreign Minister Wang Yi is now in Cairo. What's on his itinerary?
He has started already his meeting. Today, just about an hour ago, he met Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi for the first meeting by a foreign minister and a first visit by a foreign minister to New Alamein City, this flagship mega project on Egypt's Mediterranean Sea, and where the Egyptian president has been staying for some time and plans to have more of a governmental presence in the northwestern part of Egypt. Wang Yi then is currently meeting with Egyptian counterpart Sameh Shoukry. The two will be discussing regional crises. They will be discussing cooperation between Egypt and China, which has been significantly growing in recent years, especially under and during the COVID-19 pandemic. There is also a number of agreements between the two countries that...
Welcome back. And that's going to wind down our program for today, the Pan-African Journal, special worldwide radio broadcast for Sunday, July 18th, 2021. And we've been broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Detroit. And you can have access to this program by merely logging on to the Pan-African Radio Network. That's at blogtalkradio.com/Pan-African Journal. You can also read the Pan-African Newswire at panafricannews.blogspot.com. We're going to close out with the music of John Coltrane and Duke Ellington, released from January 1963. This is Abayomi Azikiwe signing off, and have a beautiful week.
Thank you.